This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Giotakis. Today, we're in a small community halfway between Ventura and Ojai. It's called Casitas Springs. About 1,000 people live here. There isn't much to find. A couple of mobile home parks, a market, a few churches, and a plant nursery.
Ah, let me see. I did count it once. At various times, I suppose I've grown 2,000
species.
Yeah, maybe more.
This is Jo O'Connell. She's a horticulturist. And like her plants, she isn't a native of California.
I was brought over here to put in an Australian garden in Ojai for a man called John Taft. And I found a husband, and I've been stuck here ever since.
Okay.
She says she found a gap in the market for Australian plants, so she started her own nursery here in Casitas Springs 27 years ago.
I grow for diversity rather than for volume.
And they're all native to Australia?
Yes, and some South Africans too.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, Southern Hemisphere, and occasionally New Zealanders.
Okay.
Well, now she's watching in horror as plants like hers and the rest of the Australian ecosystem are facing catastrophe. The fires in Australia have burned more than 20 million acres since September, and they've threatened hundreds of plants and animal species. Some are thought to have gone extinct, although it's too early to say which ones. Today on Greater LA, KCRW's Kaylee Wells speaks with one Australian living in Southern California who says she knows the reality of wildfires all too well.
Wherever Jo goes, so does her Australian blue heeler, Wallaby. Her nursery is nestled between mountains. It's quiet, the air is still. You can smell the earth here. Behind the half dozen greenhouses are piles of dirt in between neatly dug trenches. It's the beginnings of Jo's new house, but it's also a reminder of where her old house used to be.
That's where my house was, and an office and everything. And that all burnt, and we're waiting. 2 years later, we're still waiting to build.
Jo was one of the hundreds of people who lost their homes in the 2017 Thomas Fire. The house, the office, and a barn where she did a lot of the work for her nursery, they all burned. She had evacuated, but two neighbors who stayed fought the fire on her property and saved a cottage there where Jo lives now.
We were the only people in town that lost our house. The locals tell us that the wind changed and it came up over the hill and ignited the palm trees and the eucalypts, but we don't know for sure.
That's the closest she's come to picking up and moving back home.
After the fire, when we thought that we lost our nursery as well as our house, I thought, oh, I just want to go back to Australia, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm done my time here. This is too much. And then all the horticulturists, all the plant people, they all rallied, they made a collection, they gave me credit at seed merchants in Australia, they sent me cuttings from their farms, and I went, oh no, I have to stay.
She makes the 15-hour flight every year to visit her family in New South Wales. Last time she went out was November. The fires had already been burning for 2 months. She was glad she wasn't staying.
It was too much. And I suppose some of that is from the shock of being in the fire over here. And, you know, you could smell the smoke, you could taste the smoke. It's just out of control.
The fires in Australia have scorched more than 20 million acres. To put that into context, the Thomas Fire is the second largest in California history. The Australian megafire is more than 73 Thomas Fires put together. If you drew a line from Los Angeles to Bakersfield to Las Vegas to Palm Springs, it'd be like burning everything within that wonky square. Jo says she's glad she's not facing it firsthand, but she says even watching it from here is beyond belief.
It's just gut-wrenching. It's depressing. You can't imagine it's our country, and you feel like you're part of it, and it's just burning up. Our rainforests, they've definitely been threatened. 30 species of trees, they say, could be wiped out. The potoroo, which is like a little rat kangaroo, very cute. They're talking about that being wiped out. There's so many rare plants there that could be gone now. Their ecosystems were fragile to begin with, and now such a big fire.
Wildfires aren't that unusual in Australia. A lot of the trees have hard bark that can withstand fires. But add in a long drought and record-breaking heat, and many trees don't stand a chance.
The real danger is the subtropical rainforest north of Sydney, between Sydney and Brisbane, that have been affected, and the rainforests don't usually burn. And the trees in those forests usually have a thin skin, so their capability of come back is not good.
She's also worried about her 90-year-old mother, who still lives in New South Wales. And there's her closest cousin, who is a volunteer firefighter and who she hasn't heard from in 2 days.
It's inexplicable. It's helpless. It's just a disaster. It's depressing.
And while Australia's still burning, Jo is in California, picking up the pieces left from the Thomas Fire. 2 years later, her plants are still coming back from the damage. For some of them, the future's uncertain.
It's not looking good. Look at that. That looks like it's all dead.
Most of her business is growing plants so she can collect and sell their seeds and cuttings. So anything that didn't make it, she has the seeds to start over.
Some of them have come back, so life goes on. And some I just totally lost and I've replanted.
And a few of them are stronger than ever.
This big tree here was right in the middle there. It burnt and it came back, and it's a brachychiton. It's from the Australian rainforest and hasn't looked back. Look, it's grown 6 foot since we planted it, or maybe 8 foot. So that's the fire tree, and it's called the Illawarra Flame.
That has to be really inspiring to see stuff like that.
Yeah, that's great. We love that. That's my favorite tree.
A living reminder in a little town north of Los Angeles of Australian resilience for the plants and people 8,000 miles away where the fires are still burning. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
Now, Australia has been drier and hotter than ever in recent years. Last spring was the driest on record, and you know, it's the middle of summer right now in the southern hemisphere. And back in December, the country had its hottest day ever recorded, with an average temperature across the whole country of 105.6 degrees. Now, estimates are that wildfires in Australia, they call them bushfires, by the way, down there, have burned more than 25 million acres since the season began in September. That's an area about the size of the state of Indiana. On Monday, a team of 20 veteran wildfire fighters from Southern California headed there to join the effort to slow those fires down. At least 25 people have died in the bushfires. The worst of them are in the southeast, and the big cities in that area, Melbourne, Sydney, Canberra, they're blanketed in thick smoke, making them among the most polluted cities on the planet right now. But worst off have been the animals. The University of Sydney estimates that more than a billion mammals, birds, and reptiles have been killed in the fires. That's billion with a B. Australia is home to a lot of unique species. We've all seen pictures of the cute koalas and the kangaroos with burned paws wrapped in bandages. Hard to look at. At one kangaroo sanctuary, many of the animals have disappeared, but one has actually come back.
This is Honey. She hasn't received medical treatment yet, and she's in critical condition.
There are so many more types of animals affected. Australia is a biodiversity hotspot. Some of its special animal species may now be at risk of extinction because of those fires. Millions of acres again. And not just wild animals, but many farm animals have been burned, such as the horses of a family in Cobargo, a town in the state of New South Wales.
They've all been burnt on the face, all here. She's quite sore. So the skin's starting to come off now, just all around here. She's all burnt.
It's just heartbreaking. There's been a little reprieve in recent days with a patch of cooler weather and some scattered rain. Unfortunately, that's about to end with stronger winds in the forecast and higher temperatures. Australia's wildfire season is beginning longer as the country gets hotter and drier. That's expected to continue. It is obviously a situation that we here in California know all too well. And we send our condolences for the terrible losses that our friends down under are experiencing. By the way, if you'd like to help, there are many places you can go online to do that. For those helping all the animals, check out worldwildlife.org. There are links there that you can contribute money to help those folks help the animals. We'll also post some other links to other organizations at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. We'll be back in a moment with a conversation about pesticides. The city of Malibu wants to ban all of them. The state of California says not so fast. More on that right after this on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's wintertime, and you may have some new residents in your home. No, I'm not talking about new pets or anything that you might have gotten over the holidays. I'm talking about rats. And getting rid of rats or rodents, well, that's created a whole host of problems. There are traps, of course, and then there are poisons like what's called rodenticides. But those poisons also end up killing a lot of birds and other animals. Think food chain. Well, last month, Malibu's city council approved a broad ban prohibiting the use of any and all pesticides within the city limits to protect the city's wildlife from toxic chemicals. The state of California, however, says that is not legal, that Malibu overstepped. Behind the legislation is Malibu's pro tem mayor, Mikey Pearson. Mr. Mayor, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
We also have joining us Timothy Malloy, who's a professor of law at UCLA, and he specializes in sustainable technology and public policy. Professor, thank you for being with us as well.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I want to start with you because you worked for months to get the city council to pass this ban, this overall ban on pesticides. Why is this such a priority for you and for the city of Malibu?
Well, Malibu is a very environmentally focused city to start off with, but the Santa Monica Mountains are truly a gem that are, you know, we're part of and extend over towards the valley. And protecting that wildlife is really important to us. It's been very obvious for a number of years that things were not right and that the food chain was being dramatically impacted by poisons. And we've wanted to act for a very long time. But really, we want to be a leader in this space. Environmentally, one of my goals being on the city council is to be a leader on environmental issues. And this was top of my list after personally fighting the fire that came through and seeing what happened to the wildlife and literally fighting the fire and seeing animals suffering and then seeing the suffering afterwards from anticoagulants. It's just not something we're willing to do in our town at all.
What do you say to the state who says you guys overreached?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I'm not a lawyer, so I can't pretend to know the answer. And my last number of months working to get this agendized, clearly there's a lot of different opinions. The Coastal Commission and the County of Los Angeles support us passing this amendment. The DPR, the Department of Pesticide Regulation, does not. Senator Henry Stern supported us. Our city attorney was not so sure. So if there's a legal issue to settle later, so be it.
Well, let's talk about the legal issue because we happen to have someone on the line who looks at not only sustainable technology, but also public policy. And professor, from a legal standpoint, Malibu's plan obviously is ambitious, but there are limitations into how the city would hypothetically be able to implement a broad ban like this, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of different issues. You start out with there is some language at the state level that prohibits cities from regulating pesticides. Malibu and other communities have kind of developed a workaround from that by working with the Coastal Commission and making this part of their local coastal program. There's some indication that the courts support that, but you know, the what Malibu's doing is bold here and ambitious by covering all pesticides, not just rudenticides. So at the existential level, there is some real question about the legality of it. And then, of course, when you get to implementation, you get some issues as well, because by creating a ban on all pesticides, there's a question about, you know, does that mean in every instance that folks can't use any kind of herbicide or pesticide in their house? Also, you know, by using the method of bringing the local coastal program, at least in the past, that's been viewed as limited to new development. So there may be some limitation here. I haven't had a chance to look at the actual language that was approved on December 9th. But there is some limitation, at least in prior uses of this, where it's only new development that the ban would apply to.
I think it's fair to say, Professor, that most people want to be rid of pests or rodents. They don't want rats in their homes. Rats obviously carry disease. But they also don't necessarily want to poison the environment to do that. And not all pesticides are created equal, obviously. And we'll get to the mayor again in just a moment. But a big issue for Malibu is the use of anticoagulants, which is this poison that's used to exterminate rats. Can you, Professor, spell out why those anticoagulant rodenticides work, but also why they're so harmful to the environment?
Sure. These anticoagulants essentially cause the rodents to bleed to death, right, internally, because they can't clot. So the blood just seeps into the body. But the problem is then those dead rodents, you know, become food for other animals up the food web. And those animals are also affected by the toxics. So you end up with a situation where the targeted pest is killed, but so are other animals affected. So you have a significant impact on the ecology.
Mr. Mayor, how do you get rid of rats then if you're not using these anticoagulants? What I mean, do you just use rat traps?
The first thing you do is have proper sanitation in your city, such as locking lids on trash cans, sealing up your house so rats can't come in. Certainly snap traps and other items like that work very well too.
When you put forth a broad ban on these pesticides, what if there's something out there? You know, I know there are different kinds of insect sprays, like made from more organic things, citrus peels, that are safe for humans and other animals. I mean, is that a part of this ban as well?
No, it's not. But the reason I think the one advantage to us taking a little too long to get here on this is that we're now seeing that the pesticide industry is evolving. So just banning anti-rodenticides probably would not accomplish our goals, because there's so many new toxins and poisons being created all the time. So that's why we went for pesticides, which can include things like Roundup, which has also been found to be dangerous. So we're trying to be a little more comprehensive, and that was our goal.
But do you think, like, going forward, is this an evolving city ordinance? Is this something that you will revisit in the future?
Well, it's not through yet. You know, it still has to go through Coastal. So we'll get notes back from the Coastal Commission and take it from there. Our language is quite broad. I anticipate you're right. We'll probably come back and get more detailed at some point, but we had to start somewhere, and this felt to all of us like the place to start.
Professor, do you think that this will become, you know, more ubiquitous across the state, given California's natural habitat?
Yes. Well, I think the thing about pesticides in general is that the it's very regionally specific. And if I might just say, looking at the language that I did find from the December 9th meeting, the language is quite broad in that it does not cover, on the face of it, it's not just cover rodenticides, but as the Mayor Pro Tem pointed out, covers insecticides, herbicides, which are weed killers, and any other kind of toxic chemical substances. So one of the issues that I think Malibu and other cities may have with such broad bans will be, figuring out which of the various pesticides that are available on the market will be banned and which won't. So, for example, the mayor said that organic pesticides wouldn't be covered, but it's not clear from the language of the amendments, at least the ones I'm looking at, that that would be the case.
Are there other options, you know, as far as what people will turn to get rid of these pests that could be harmful as well?
Well, that's an excellent question. And let me start out by answering first by saying this is an important step in terms of trying to get a control over the toxic materials that are being used to deal with rodents and invasive plants and insects, right? So it's important to address them. And I think this is, as I mentioned, a bold step. The issue that when you have such a broad ban or restriction on the use of pesticides, the question that comes up always is a question of regrettable substitutions. That is, what will people use instead of the materials that are currently available? And then also, will those materials be effective enough? So, for example, rodents are not just annoying, they're also a public health threat. So you do want to make sure that what you've got are alternatives that are both safe but also effective. We have to do a balancing there. One approach that is being used quite comprehensively, and you see it in place across not only California but across the nation and the world, is integrated pest management, which starts out with the assumption that we don't use toxic chemicals unless they are the last resort and that their use is justified when taking into account the impacts that it'll have on human health and the environment. So that would require folks to look first at non-chemical approaches to controlling the pest or the problem, and then kind of work your way down, if necessary, to using a chemical. And then if you do use a chemical, to use the safest one. So you have options in terms of how to approach the problem. One is an absolute ban. The other is to kind of use a management approach that emphasizes safety overall, and then also takes into account, you know, technical performance and economic impacts and those sorts of things.
Mayor Mikey Pearson, what do you say to that?
Well, yeah, he potentially is absolutely correct. But at the same time, as he also said, you have to start somewhere. A couple of years ago, we started, after seeing what the county of Ventura did, or the city of Ventura did, we started putting in raptor poles, which attracts, you know, predator birds. And the science is there that that does a better job than anticoagulants, which is hard to believe, but it's absolutely true. And reading what the county has done in the Santa Monica Mountains, it does say, except where necessary to protect and enhance the habitat itself, and where no feasible alternatives would result. So, yeah, we are very much for banning and eliminating toxic material in our community. And we does take a public education program. It does take looking at the alternatives, and that absolutely has to be part of it.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. Pro Tem Mayor Mikey Pearson of the City of Malibu. Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
And Professor Timothy Malloy over from UCLA. Professor, thank you as well.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
That's going to do it for us today. Next week, rap battles in Boyle Heights, coffee battles in South LA, and who's welcome where, and why LA County's gardens are filling up, and how local cities are trying to fix it. Composting is part of the equation. You'll hear about it. Next on KCRW, it's The Bookworm. Michael Silverblatt talks to American poet and novelist and essayist and critic Ben Lerner. Hope you'll stay tuned for that in just a moment. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast, share your thoughts with us there, and we'll also have links there for you as well to help our friends down under in Australia. Our producer is Jenna Cagle. Our editor is Sonia Geis. Our web presence is handled by Amy Ta. Phil Richards and Ray Guarna and Christine Comito help engineer the show. Christian Bordahl is our managing producer, the one who whips everything into shape. Thank you, Christian. And thank you for tuning in today. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time. Have yourself a great day.